We have a special guest on the Rev Stickies Hotline. The Stickies Hotline, my man Blake Edens, former Razorback, speaking today over at the Wyndham for the Tip-Off Club. What's up, buddy?
Oh, not much. Do you think, did y'all get permission from Suzanne for me to come on? I don't know if she'd be too happy with me.
Well,
being on her sponsored line today.
We got it taken care of.
Instead of asking first, we figured we'd just ask for forgiveness later instead of for permission.
All right, I got you.
Blake Edens, 2000 to 2003. Let me read some of these statistics here, Blake.
Oh, okay. That's enough. That's good. Really, seriously.
Okay, do you want to go through a preview? 2002-2003, Blake, do you remember going back in those days? 6'7", 227 out of Montgomery Trinity High School,
well,
Alabama.
A, I was never 6'7", and B, I was never 227. Alonzo Lane, I was a quarter inch taller than Alonzo Lane. I was 6'5 and a half, and he was 6'5 and a quarter when we measured. But I knew they had him at 6'7", and I joked that I was taller than him, and I should at least be his height in the media guide. And for some reason, I ended
nice.
Up 6'7".
So you talked yourself into another inch. That is priceless.
I'm not going to make a comment on that, but yeah.
Looking back, Vet, do you remember the significance of February 23rd, 2000?
February 23rd, 2000. No, I do not.
At that time, going into senior year, that was your career high against Vanderbilt.
Really?
You jacked it up 9 times, you hun, you selfish player.
Nah, you did. You could do that. With, I mean, well, that would be one possession.
That'd be in halftime.
I mean, you had Kareem Reed. Nobody else had Kareem Reed just begging you to shoot the ball and coming down the court and handing it off and Hood rebounding and kicking it back out. I mean, if you got one shot on our team, it was you were definitely lucky.
Well, you know what it comes down to, though, Blake? You got to understand how to deal with people, and that's what I tell everybody. When I see these guys, whether if they have any kind of offensive talent and they're not demanding the ball and in practice every day, and this goes back to even Rodney, talking to his point guard, his big men, if you're not telling them where you want it, how you want it, and if you don't look at them on certain occasions – right in the eye and say, give me the ball, I need it now, then you're never going to get it. Because playing with a guy like Kareem Reed, I'll give you an example. If you missed a shot, if he passed it to you and you missed it, he was going to yell at you. He was going to cuss you out.
And well, that's what you can, you know, anybody. When Rodney scored 51 or even when he scored 30, what did he score, 36 the other night, 33, right. 36, you can't score that many points on your own. I mean, you have those four other guys on the court. Your teammates have to not only want you to hit those shots, but they have to find you. I mean, making the shots almost the easy part. It's getting the trust and respect of your teammates.
And that's every day in practice. That's doing it a game. So
that's why I didn't get the ball that much, was that whole trust and respect thing.
No, listen, you just had to threaten a few people. You should have threatened Eric Ferguson and Charles Tatum.
I did. I tried to. I think they knew I was bluffing.
Well, first, let's get into a little bit of what you've been doing. And today you're speaking at the Tip-Off Club. I always say tip-off or tip-in, but I know it's at the Wyndham. What time you go on stage? 12 o'clock?
Something like that.
Now, this is your second appearance? Speaking over
No, this will be my first time. They've talked to me before. I'm hoping that this isn't a reflection of the direction of the Tip-Off Club. I'm sure that,
no, come on. I'm sure you've got
I'm sure that they just ran dry. I know that they'd love to have you, Pat, but you're a big-time radio personality.
No. Clearly, I'm way too old. My memory's gone. I don't have any memories from when I was up there. But you have a unique view of it because you played for Coach Richardson and then with Stan Heath, and I know you're still close to the program. So you've kind of been able to get a good we should have you on here to answer a lot of the questions of where the program is, where it was.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
So let me – well, let's just start off. And I guess, you know what, we don't normally do this, But if anyone does have a question for Blake, you can give a call and we'll let you answer it. But
really?
That could be dangerous.
Just because you have been around the program.
Can we keep it inside a certain subject? I've got friends out there like, yeah, I've got a question. This isn't a Dr. Phil session where it's just, you know, I don't want to talk about what's going on in Egypt or the Chinese economy or anything like that.
And speaking of that, Blake, Drew Baxter wanted me to throw something out at you. Blake was an assistant coach for Jericho's team when he was coming up at the boys' club.
What a bad idea.
They had an undefeated season, won a championship, and a lot of that credit was due to Blake.
Blake, I think you need to rework your bio and put that one in there.
I'm thinking about it. I didn't really coach as much as I just kept Drew from getting thrown out of boys' and girls' club gyms for his language.
So before we get to the weekend, this past weekend, the Vanderbilt game, just give us an assessment of how you feel right now where the program is, where you think it's going, and your thoughts on this season.
Well, you know, let's just talk about the Vanderbilt game.
No, that's too easy. And by the way,
I was so proud of our effort. In all seriousness, though, watching us play that Vanderbilt game, we played the kind of basketball that we were most successful playing. And that's, you know, it's not a fast break team, but this team is better when they push the ball a little bit. And they don't score a lot off their primary break, but they're a good secondary break basketball team. And Pat, as you know, you can't get in your secondary break unless you have a primary break. And for those listening don't understand, your primary break is that first outlet pass and get it down the court quickly. But your secondary break is when that primary break doesn't quite work and you go into those first set of, you know, one or two quick screens and the defense is still trying to figure out who they're guarding. And it gives somebody like Rodney a chance to catch the ball in rhythm and shoot coming down the court. And it gives, you know, Marshawn Powell and you know, this past weekend, Michael Sanchez a chance to, you know, kind of get isolated and do some one-on-one work from the short corner of the wing. And this team just plays with more confidence and more rhythm. They play a little bit more aggressive when they're pushing the ball. And hopefully, you know, we saw that, and that's something that we'll continue to do.
What do you think Coach Petrino is trying to do with constantly changing that starting lineup? It's more with the guards. I know he's shuffling.
Are we talking about the Sugar Bowl? You just said Coach Petrino.
I mean Coach Pelfrey.
Were you playing too much beer pong last night at Prost?
Thursday. That's Thursday night. By the way, thanks for showing up. I really appreciate you supporting your friends. But yeah. What do you think he's trying to accomplish with all the line changes?
Well, a lot of times as a coach, I think you're trying to find that five that you want out there and find the chemistry. He hadn't been able to do that, but you know, Coach Pelfrey, you know, seems to be a guy that is a situational substitution guy, and if he can get some defensive guys in for what he thinks is a defensive stretch, he does that. If he thinks they need more offense, he does that. I mean, every coach kind of has a different way to skin the cat, and you know, his substitution patterns seem to be, you know, his approach to who he wants out there and how.
Okay, well, let me start giving you some tough questions, because each day we sit here and we hear from a lot of the listeners and people who are supporters of the program, and they ask if we see any improvement, if we see the program going in the positive direction it needs to be. And you have done games this year. You've commentated, done the color analyst, and like I said, you've been around the program for a while now. So do you feel that it's going in the direction that it needs to be?
I think that the game against Vanderbilt showed the kind of team we can be. I mean, and this was with Delvon Johnson and Marshawn Powell in foul trouble. And you know, some of their fouls were, you know, it was almost like they didn't want to be in the game. I mean, they were fouling 90 feet from the basket. But, you know, if you can get some of these guys in and have them playing well, you can get Michael Sanchez help. He showed what he's capable of. I mean, obviously he's not going to be a 20-point guy night in, night out, but if you can get 8 points and some rebounds and some hustle out of him, you have a chance to be a pretty good team.
Okay, what would you be satisfied with this season, how they end up?
What would I be satisfied with?
What would you be okay with?
Oh, Pat.
They end the season.
Are you serious? Are you just too lazy to talk about this yourself?
No, I hear this stuff every day, Blake. I want you.
It's your job.
That's true, but I'll buy you lunch. Maybe will that get an answer out of you?
You know, I would be happy with us finishing strong, showing that we have some momentum going into the following season with this new class coming in. The SEC West is down. The East isn't quite what it used to be. So, you know, we have a stretch of games here to finish the season, that, that really we should have at minimum a winning record in the SEC, if not, you know, 9 or 10 wins. So
with the SEC, that's one of the tough things, is you can win the SEC West and the NCAA tournament, you probably wouldn't even make it. You know, we happened to Mississippi State last year. So
if we're gonna make the NCAA tournament, we've got to have at least, you know, 10 wins in conference. Yeah. One of those is going to have to be a Kentucky or, you know, a Tennessee. You know, Georgia is surprisingly struggling. I thought they'd be a little bit better. But, you know, we've got the win against Alabama. They're playing well. If we can go to Alabama and get that win and get some, we'll get them under our belt. But we're still going to, you know, even if we get 10, we'll still have to do something in the SEC tournament to prove that we belong.
Well, there's no question that everybody wants to go to the NCAA tournament. You don't want to say NIT. But the reality of the situation is you want to see that the program is moving forward. They're winning games. And if the NIT is what they end up being in this year, I have no problem with that, because teams, you can look back on any team, has improved. Well, they should improve. Most of the time, they will improve. If they go to the NIT, then next year they come back even stronger. And it's a lot of teams use it as a stepping stone. I had to be part of a team that went to the NIT in 97. Came back in 98, a much better team. So as long as things are moving forward, and like you said, I don't think you need to hang the hopes on any program, on an incoming class, because potential, you know. How many times have we seen a guy supposed to be fantastic coming in, he never materializes? So,
yeah, I mean, I think they were billing me as the next Pat Bradley, and that is amazing. After 2 or 3 games, nobody really wanted to talk about that anymore.
You're your own man. 6'7". How many times? I mean, this guy led the SEC in many categories, talking about Blake Edens. But with Blake Edens.
Stats that they didn't keep up with, apparently. I don't know.
Blake Edens joining us, former Razorback guard, combo guard. Actually, he probably played the 1-2-3. Speaking today over at the Wyndham Riverfront about noon, I believe. So what else? What else did you think about this season? Anything coming up forward? You're going to be at the game Wednesday night, Saturday?
I may be up there Saturday. I've got a 15-month-old baby now, and trying to keep everything happy in the household and helping the wife out when I can. So we may actually all come up there Saturday. But you know, anytime I get a chance to go up for a game, anytime I get a chance to go to Fayetteville and hang out and see old friends and go to Bud Walton Arena, I go. I wish more people would. I know it's not, you know, maybe the product that they want to see right now, and the economy's tough, but, you know, it's still an opportunity to support the program, because it's going to be there. And the more we support it, the more opportunity we have to get better. So.
Now, you were also at the national championship game. Your brother.
I was.
Yeah.
I was.
We saw you at the SEC championship game, sitting next to Cam Newton's mother.
Yes. And yeah, we're in. As you well know, there as a player, you have family tickets, and we're sitting in the family section. And it just so happened that the way it's been set up all year, my family was sitting with the Newtons, so got to know them a little bit. I didn't know that I was going to be on national TV 18,000 times that night.
Well, I mean, if you hug and kiss his mother, I think there's probably a good chance you can get on TV.
Yeah. Well, Pat, I'm getting Terry Hartwick here pulling the, you know, Apollo hook on me.
I'll give you a solid right here, Blake. We appreciate it. Go listen to Blake today, 12 o'clock at the Wyndham Riverfront. And here's another plug. He's on Twitter.
Oh, don't
nice.
Do that.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Nice.
Blake Edens, the Twitter man. Blake, I appreciate you, buddy. Make a promise. You're going to come in studio before the season's over.
After some of those questions you asked me, I can't promise that, but we'll
work
on it.
10
we'll
to
work
1.
On it.
You're not
we'll
working
work
anyway.
It.
Come on. All right, buddy. We appreciate
you. See you, man.